What's the best advice you've ever been given?
I've been given a lot of great advice. Always trust your instincts and follow that higher journey, the soul journey, you know, the one that's moving you forward with ease.
This episode is brought to you by Varidesk. Varidesk makes office furniture simple, seriously. Everyone probably knows their height adjustable stand-up desk. I use it every day in my video production business. It was really the first step to create a happier, healthier me because I was sitting all the time, losing circulation, and standing up just feels a lot healthier. Today, Varidesk has a full line of furniture and accessories for the office or the classroom, and they make it easy to order, assemble, and change around as you need it. You really gotta check them out. Just go to varidesk.com/behindthebrand and take a look.
Hi, my name's Abby Cornish. I wrote a cookbook called Peskin, a feel-good cookbook with my best friend, Jacqueline King Schiller, which is in stores at the end of March. And I'm on Behind the Brand with Brian Elliott.
Abby, what's the hardest part of being you?
Being me? That was the answer. Okay, come on.
Name one thing you can't live without.
My dog.
What's a talent you have that most people don't know?
Painter.
What are you really bad at?
Surfing.
Who would you like to trade jobs with for a week?
Miley Cyrus.
Who is someone living or dead you'd like to have dinner or drinks with?
Jimi Hendrix.
Favorite color?
Ocean blue.
Favorite food?
Japanese.
Favorite book?
Favorite book is probably, that's a hard one. The one that struck me the most is probably The Ass That Saw the Angel by Nick Cave.
Who has made you the most starstruck?
That's a good question. Probably Gary Oldman.
What have you learned about yourself?
Other than Jay-Z and Beyonce.
That's fair. Let's put it in the context of writing this book. What have you learned about yourself?
Oh my gosh, so much. I found that it really tested my patience, my ego. You know, this really pushes you into a new place.
What's your definition of the perfect day?
Waking up, hanging out, cuddling the dogs, having a beautiful breakfast, going to the beach, being outdoors, being with friends and family, cooking, watching the sunset.
If you could take lessons from any expert, what would you learn and from whom?
Janis Joplin. I just learn how to sing and play guitar and, I mean, just how to be like that, right? Just so soulful and visceral and animalistic and just present, ready to roll. Yeah.
Do you have a superpower?
Yes.
What is it?
I can't tell you.
Hey, I'm Brian Elliott. Welcome to another edition of Behind the Brand. Today I'm here with actor, author, and producer Abby Cornish. Abby, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I usually ask my guests, how'd you get this job?
This job?
Yeah.
Like sitting in this seat?
No, or I mean how did you get here? Like,
how did I get... So the acting... Okay. When I was a teenager, I grew up on a farm with a lot of brothers. And so when I was a teenager and I was coming of age, I really wanted to do something girly. So I entered a modeling competition at 14, won that competition, and was signed by an agent who sent me off to an acting audition, got that gig. Producers made another show, and I found my passion, my vocation. I did want to study veterinary science, so I got the marks to do that, but acting just took off, and I really love it. As soon as I made films, too, I really found my niche. In terms of producing, that for me is just a carry-on. It's sort of an inevitable evolution. As an author, that was a real surprise to me. When I turned 30, I'm 36 now, when I turned 30, I had a really big shift in my life. It was a complete shift, spiritually, mentally, physically. And I was a vegetarian for 19 years. I started eating meat again. I started seeing a nutritionist. I just felt like I really wanted to be in tune with my body right now.
Yeah. Was it one experience, or was it just sort of, you know, you were that of a certain age and you were maturing and you had that sort of revelation? Like, what caused that shift?
I think I was growing up, but you know, my 20s, I had an amazing 20s. I left home when I was 15, finished my schooling out of home. And when I was 17, I finished school at 17. I took off, traveled throughout the world, and my 20s were just incredible, like dream 20s. And just at 30, I was like, okay, I want to settle down. And I'd bought my own house a few years before that. And, you know, I was starting to think about maybe one day getting married and having children and the sort of mother I wanted to be, and started to think a lot more about my health and my home. And, you know, I started going to the markets and buying flowers and wanting to cook and just, like, you know, basically growing up. Mm-hmm. And being much more health conscious. What does my body need? What, listening to my body. My best friend is a chef, and we were in Muskoka, Canada, and I would always help her with food and help her prep and stuff, but we were in the kitchen and I was reading a book of Zen Koans called Bring Me the Rhinoceros by John Tarrant. And I was in a chapter about a woman who had found enlightenment in the kitchen just through the most simplest of domestic activities, like washing the dishes, cooking. And one day she became enlightened in the kitchen. And it kind of blew my mind, you know, because you think of enlightenment as being a really, you know, amazing, some guy sitting under a tree for 10 years and or someone at the top of a temple, or, you know, I don't know. So I said to Jacqueline, I said, who's a very soulful, very spiritual woman, hey, Jack, do you think it's possible to find enlightenment here in the kitchen? And she just, like, nodded and smiled, and, like, this little glint was in her eye. And I was like, can you teach me how to cook?
So let's back up for a second, and let me ask, by your definition, what is enlightenment? What does it mean to be enlightened?
This is, you know, bigger conversation, obviously. But people, I am not enlightened, I'll tell you that much. I have met people who are enlightened.
Does that mean to have life figured out, or, like, your purpose in life? What does it mean to you?
Just a greater connection to all living things and absolute oneness with everything. It almost sounds like heaven on earth in a way, you know? Just, yeah, and I mean, you can read about it in a lot of books, obviously. There's a lot of books that talk about enlightenment.
Well, I was most curious about how you interpret that word. Because how I think about it is maybe different. But
right. Total compassion. Just everything is what it is.
At peace with yourself, at peace with the world.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no good and bad and dark and light. And this is just one God. Basically, it's God. Living in that.
And so your pursuit was to find it through the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think I was going to find it. I just thought I'd give it a whirl.
Yeah.
So I started to learn how to cook, and also that really changed my home, because my home really came alive with fruits and vegetables and flowers, and my health changed. The way I was eating in restaurants changed. My relationship with my friends changed, my family, because all of a sudden I was engaging much more, and I realized this. Because I was such a foodie in my 20s, obviously traveling, but I realized that a lot of us, the reason why we haven't embraced that part of our lives is because we haven't really taken those first basic initial steps. So myself and Jacqueline, we started every Sunday, we would go to the farmer's market, we would buy local fresh organic produce, and we would take it home and we would cook all day long. And then we would feed our family and friends and open a bottle of wine. After about 3 years of this, I said to Jackie, this is so beautiful. And we would do special occasions together. We sometimes did four-course meals for up to 15, 20 people. I was kind of like her sous chef. And I said to Jackie, this is really beautiful. We should do something. And she said, I've always wanted to make a book. And I said, well, let's make a book. So we went and got an agent signed with Abrams and spent 3 years on this book, which is just about to be released end of March.
So what would you say is the biggest thing you learned? Let's kind of break it down, unpack the process. Possibly a lot of people who are watching this also have some sort of IP, right? Let's call it intellectual property. They have a great idea, or they have an expertise in whatever it is, whether that's health or fitness or quilting or ponies, you know, and they want to do a book. So what did you learn doing that process? Let's maybe impart some wisdom.
Yeah, I think obviously it's great to already have content. The good thing is because we were cooking so much together already, we had content. putting something that we freestyle into a recipe form is a whole nother game. And we got really good at that. At first it was like, whoosh, you know, this is so intense. But then towards the end, we could put something into a recipe really fast.
Did you have to do much research? Like, is this or is this not already out there? Like, did you do that kind of research?
The only thing we did is we came up with this way of cooking, this lifestyle called Peskin, which we created. We named that. We created a definition. So it's someone who eats whole foods, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, eats seafood and eggs, but is dairy-free and white and red meat-free. So pescatarian meets vegan. It's very 2019.
Well, I love it. So you're creating a new category.
Yeah, yes, yes. And I tried to trademark and copyright it, but I couldn't because there's too much stuff out there. There was no Peskin, but just too many things relating to it. It killed me. I was like, oh, I was so excited about creating something, but I mean, we still created it. I just, you know, there's no trademark on it or anything.
Okay, so you did the research. You sort of knew what was out there. You had been living that lifestyle before, and you sort of adapted it to your own tastes.
Here's the thing. I think any venture should always begin from the heart, because if there's passion behind it, that's going to drive it from day one to the infinite day. No matter what you go through, you deal with a few people along the way, maybe you don't get along with, maybe they disagree with you, or maybe you have to fight against to get what you want. But you fight because you care, you know, and you also work because you care. If you fuel something with love, it will grow. It's like a plant. If you have a plant in your house, if you love it, you listen to it. Is it a little thirsty? Are you overwatering it? Does it need to grow? Do you need to change the pot? That plant will be so healthy and so taken care of. Our bodies are like that. Our minds are like that. Our souls are like that. Our work is like that. I think in terms of your audience, a lot of people that are going to be watching this are watching this because they're building a brand, right? They're building something that they believe in. Of course, you have to have a knowledge that there needs to be a niche there, unless you're creating a really cool, new, awesome niche that you are guaranteed to have momentum and floor space on.
Yeah, I mean, you went exactly where I was going next, which is a lot of people will have this brilliant idea. They rush out, they create it and rush out to market and try and sell it, which seems to be a very risky proposition, right? You already knew and established that there was a demand for this. How did you know?
Talking to people. I think we're living in a very health conscious society right now, particularly in the Western world, particularly in Los Angeles, California, because, you know, this is the epicenter of entertainment business, which is where, you know, the way we look and the way we feel and the energy we put across. And that comes through good vibes, good food, good relationships, good, like, you know, a lot of people go to therapy here, a good mental state and all that sort of stuff. I also feel like people are wanting to share more in that way, get-togethers, and even if there's just like little cook-offs or little potlucks and stuff like that, a sense of community is really needed right now. It was before, but I really believe with what's happened with the political climate in the last few years and how dramatic and drastic that those shifts have been and how displacent we've all become and full of fear and anxiety. And we're actually leaning on each other a little more for love and care and friendship and community. And our communities are building stronger on a smaller scale.
And food is becoming at times a negative escape. We, you know, we go to the lowest common denominator, which is a donut or something that's counterproductive to our health.
Yeah, so we want to reach, we don't just want to reach, you know, LA, New York, London, Paris, Sydney, wherever, you know, wherever. We want to reach middle America too, who are looking for a little something, who are looking for a way, because the great thing about our book is, because there's a lot of cookbooks out there, and I never used to have cookbooks. I just used to love freestyling. But obviously, making a cookbook, I bought a lot. There's a lot of cookbooks that feel really inaccessible. You open them up, and it's like, oh, am I allowed to swear on this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Don't watch this one, Dad. hates it when I swear. Anyway, so yeah, there's a lot of, you're like, oh shit, wait, that's just for the sauce?
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't even know what that ingredient is. You go to this store, and ugh, you know, and you kind of give up. Or their diet books, and because ours is not a diet book. I mean, it's healthy, yeah, that's a no-brainer. But it's not a diet book, and it's not preachy at all. And also, too, it's like, it celebrates love and friendship and food and life. It's like, I don't know, it's got some good stuff in it. I also love that we start with the basics. So we start with how to cook beans, how to cook grains, how to cook vegetables in three different ways, how to batch cook, what to buy at the supermarket just to have around, how to make smoothies, and we have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then we work our way into more complicated meals that are still manageable. But by the time you get there, you're just flying in the kitchen anyway. And that what we want to do is give people the foundation and the building blocks for them to then be free in their kitchen, like we are now. And
what are those building blocks? Because I'm certainly interested in what it is. I mean, the book sounds really interesting. I'm into that. I'm a foodie too, and I'm trying to eat healthier because I am like you. You know, you get to a certain age and you're like, okay, time out. Like, well, I have to really assess where I'm at and where I'm headed.
Yeah.
And eating right is one of the hardest things to do, right? Because of time schedules and all that. So I'm super interested in what the book is, but I want to back up a little bit and talk about, like, why you're doing it, but also the process of it, because I think a lot of people can learn from you who are also trying to do their thing and maybe take a page from your playbook. So let's break down some of these questions I got, which is really about the process. So what was one of the most surprising things that you learned during this process? You know, like, maybe you thought, okay, we love doing this, we're passionate about it, we sort of know who wants it, but like, what did you learn? What was surprising about doing it that maybe you can impart some wisdom so to help other people?
Don't always give away things to other people that you can do yourself. I think we did extensive amount of research, for example, in the beginning in terms of the book, photography, art direction, prop buying, set design, surfaces, and so many people, you sit down and they're like, yeah, we could do this photo shoot for, let's say, $80,000. We'll bring on an art designer, a prop stylist, a prop buyer, and blah, 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 blah. Oh, right, so do we then at the end get to keep the props we buy? Oh, no, that's part of the... And it's like, okay, thank you so much. You guys are lovely. Photography's great, but that's way out of our budget.
Yeah.
And then anyway, you get down to it, you realize you can hire a really incredible photographer who's amazing at what they do to just take the photos.
Right.
And you can go out and buy props. And guess what? You get to keep them. Not to take away anyone's job, of course, because some people can't select props. Some people are hopeless at shopping. Some people don't want to keep the props. But myself and Jacqueline, like, we love detail. I'm an artist. She's an artist. We're girls. We love going shopping. We loved keeping everything at the end of the shoot. We have that. There's so much sentimental value, and we still have it. We can still use it. It gave us complete artistic control because we were shopping for surfaces, and we're going through these surface libraries, and again, not to discount surface libraries, because I think you have to be an artist to be able to create them. But I said to Jackie, you know, and these surfaces were renting for like $140 a week, and you had to give them back. And we went to a few places, and I said to Jackie, I can make that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's plaster and paint and inks and dyes.
See, I love this advice. I love this advice because what you're really saying is, you know, it may not be as insurmountable as you think. Like, if price is a budget, or if, like, oh, we don't have the right talent, you know, or even me, when I got started doing this, it's like, well, I'm not J.J. Abrams or Steven Soderbergh or Ron Howard. It's almost a little bit, I think, becomes this obstacle. And there's a word that we use a lot, imposter syndrome, right? We think no one's granted us permission, or we've never done this before, therefore we don't feel worthy or capable or allowed to do this. But your advice is brilliant. It's like, whatever you can do, whatever you think you're capable of doing, go for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially in this day and age where we're talking about this, it's like, this actually shoots a 4K picture.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference between what you could snap and what that $80,000 photographer could take, yeah?
Yeah, know the money that you have, stay within your budget because you don't want to stretch. You don't want to start pulling out money out of your mortgage.
Yeah,
and know what you can do, know what you can't do, know where to put your money. If it's into a great photographer that has a really good setup and who's a good team player, put it there. I honestly, even though it took me hours and hours and hours to, I have like one of the best surface libraries in LA right now. We're actually joking about opening our own surface library because I have like 20 originals. And then also too, we hunted down together all this old marble and stone. So we go to all the places like out in the middle of nowhere and these big warehouses and they take us out to the junkyard. And we'd just roam the junkyard, but we'd find these incredible pieces of marble that usually would sell for like hundreds and hundreds of bucks.
Yeah.
But they just want to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And it takes like two men to carry. They're so freaking heavy. I mean, I was like so strong when we finished this because I was in charge of all the art design. Jacqueline was in charge of the kitchen when we did the shoot. And she had a couple of people in the kitchen and we would decorate together, but she was mostly in charge of the kitchen. I was in charge of art, set and surfaces. And I was lifting those mofos like there's no tomorrow. Like they were heavy. and even putting them in the garage at home, I just have stacks now. And these things are beautiful. So
maybe you found, a new stream of revenue or a side hustle. Like,
I know. I need to hire someone to take care of it all. Yeah. I just don't have the time.
How did you guys decide who does what? You know, sometimes if you get into a family business or a partnership, it can be a nightmare.
Yeah.
How did you decide who does what?
Well, that came quite naturally, but whenever we needed to, like, we just take stuff on. So Jacqueline would be like, I'll write this, and I'll go, okay, oh, cool, I'll write this. And she's like, I've really got to focus on recipes. And I'll be like, okay, well, I'll do intros and feel-good ingredients.
So it's very natural then.
It's very natural. Yeah. And for example, she had a baby when we got when we got the book deal, she wasn't even pregnant. She now has a two-and-a-half-year-old. So there was days where she was like, Quinn's sick. And I'd be like, I got this. And I would just drive around, run around and pick all this stuff up and come over. And, we just had a very functional relationship.
Yeah.
Something that I wouldn't say is like it's very unique. It's pretty special.
Yeah. I was gonna say.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. No, it's amazing.
Doesn't always work out that way, but another question for you. So, can you think about some of the mistakes that you made along the way? You know, a lot of people get stuck. I like the word stuck, or like to break it down because they'll say things like, "Well, failure is not an option," and so I have to just do this no matter what. But the reality is failure is an option, has to be, in order to get through it or be successful. So what did you get wrong along the way in order to get it right?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I think I had to learn about being a businesswoman because for so much of my career I've been the artist, right? And we get away with a hell of a lot. You know what I mean? We're passionate and we're opinionated and we can go F this or nah, I'm not doing that or, and people just go cool because they're so used to that, the artist, the passionate artist. And as a businesswoman, you can't be like that because people get offended. They don't want to hear the truth. They just want to run the computer, right? Run the system, which is fine. So I just really had to learn, okay, when I'm dealing with these people, in this project, I need to go through the system and pull out the passion. If I have something I'm 100% set on, I will drive hard. And you need to maintain. Don't budge on your vision. Don't give up the dream ever. Ever. Like I heard no. Well, we heard no on this so many times. And I just said no, yes.
And why do you think they were saying no? Like what was the pushback?
Sometimes, unfortunately, it's because they want to save money here or there. Like it takes, sometimes that's the thing, you've got to get to the nitty gritty. So why can't we have this paper?
Right.
Oh, it's unavailable. No. Why can't we have this paper? Oh, because it's 3 cents more than the other one. Okay, well, let's put the money in it and let's get the paper. You know, so there's a lot of things you have to do, some figuring out, some negotiating, and also to just do business, which is so hard. You're making this beautiful, passionate, artistic, you know, thing that's come out of a friendship and babies and life and marriages, and then you've got to go do business with it. But I think it was nice because Jackie's way too nice. Like, Jackie's so nice that she can't, like, hardline. So I kind of got that job, which was difficult. You know, good cop, bad cop. And I didn't want to be bad cop, but I kind of had to be a little bit. But I learned a lot from that. And I think that's good moving forward, because now I know how to handle situations to get from point A to point B smoother, faster, and in a lot more pleasant, in a much more pleasant way.
So was that more acting, you think, or was that?
No, that was like real Abby.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say.
That was like me going, oh God, I didn't even know I had this part of me in me. Yeah. But it worked. It got, honestly, the book that we've made, I couldn't be more happy with this book. It's really beautiful. It's full of a lot of heart and soul, and we fought to make it the book that it is, and we had a lot of people help us along the way. Yeah, but that book is ours, because we not only wrote it, but we did the art design. Like I said, we chose all the props, we did the surfaces, we chose the colors, we did that book is our baby, you know.
So let's get a little reflective here, and I just wondered what kind of pushback you got, right? Because I get my own form of pushback, which is, you know, you're not as famous as that guy or that girl. Yeah. With all the content out there, and that goes for, you know, there's movies and TV and there's books and there's, you know, just everything out there. The quantity of content has never been like it has been, you know, today. So do you think now is the best time or the worst time to come up with a great idea?
I think it's the best time, because everyone's soaking things up at such a rapid rate. And I also think that things spread fast. I also believe that if something's good, it's good, you know? I mean, there's a little bit of crap out there. Yeah, sure, but we're always going to live in that kind of pop culture mentality. But something like a book, something like music, something like a legacy, whether that is the legacy of an athlete or a painter, or this lasts, you know. And so creating something, for example, the thing I love about the Peskin cookbook is I really hope that my kids see that and my kids' kids see that, and, you know, some copies last, even if they're a little beat up on the shelves, because that's, you know, that's the goods right there.
We actually have the exact same feeling about that, but I struggle with it all the time. And maybe I want to ask this for the audience too. So all that said, right, so perhaps, you know, this year the barriers to entry or, you know, the tools or the resources, they've never been as abundant as they are today.
True.
But it also creates another problem, which is now we just have an ocean of content to sift through. You know, whether that's, you know, we can just go to our nearest, online place to watch content, wherever that is. Today we're in YouTube Studios, and you can see a lot of evidence of that. But so the question then is, if the cream does rise to the top, or even if we're creating this as a journal or a legacy, I hope my kids see this too, and they go, oh, you know, Dad was great back then, wasn't he? Or, you know, I'll be very proud of this interview. How do you find two things, your voice, and how do you find your audience in a whole sea of noise?
I think your voice is within you, and I think that's about listening. And whether it's about listening to your inner self, like your true self, or listening to your what people might call your wise self, or your higher self, or listening to God, like, that's your voice. You know, that's your voice. Because I think when you follow that journey, that's the easy journey. That's the journey that will rise up. That's the journey that will have reach, and will have a career, and will make you happy, you know? In terms of your audience, I believe once you start expressing your true journey, the audience will listen. Something that I've realized is as I go on, I mean, I was born in the country and pretty quiet kind of life. So I never watched television, I never watched movies, anything like that. So becoming an actor was pretty weird, right? All of a sudden I'm stepped through the telly, all of a sudden people want to sit, like, it was really strange. So I never did it for fame or fortune. I always did it because it was my higher journey. Because of that, I was very private. I didn't really want to talk about myself or my life very much. I wanted that to be separate. I wanted to do my job. Sure, I was happy to receive accolades and praise and meet people, but then I wanted to live a normal life. As I got older, I started to realize the importance of sharing stories, the importance of being open, and also, too, I think sometimes Hollywood and the world want a lot of people to be perfect in so many ways, or create these stories and these hyper-realistic versions of them that people can't relate to. You know, and what people relate to is the struggle, the joy, the pain, the hurt, the laughter, the family, the friends, and that's who we are. I mean, no one, you're not living if you're not living all that stuff. And so part of my journey as an artist probably started in my late 20s, early 30s, was to be more honest, be more open, be more connected. You know, part of that process too was letting go of a publicist, letting go of an agent, not traveling with an entourage, doing my own hair and makeup and wearing my own clothes and relating to humanity on a human level, because that's the life I want to have, you know. I don't want to be floating above with this fake world around me. I want to talk about life. I want to experience life with people.
So besides your book, if you could think of one project that best defines you, whether that's part of your filmography or something else, what would it be?
A few films come to mind. I did a film called Bright Star with Jane Campion that I really loved, about the poet John Keats. That's who I have this tattooed around my wrist here.
What does it say?
It says, "The moving waters at their priest-like task of pure ablution round Earth's human shores." It's from the poem Bright Star. It's just beautiful. And I did a film with Heath Ledger called Candy, about two heroin addicts over about 9 years of their relationship. That is, for me, is part of my sort of legacy. And the first film I ever did, Somersault, the film that made me want to make films. Yeah, really beautiful Australian film.
So final question is just maybe some final parting words. And maybe we can put it in the context of maybe advice to your 17, 18-year-old, you know, just graduated from school kind of advice. A lot of young people are watching this, and I've been actually really surprised how many high school students and college students watch this show. Even found me, like, at the supermarket or on the street, or, you know, like, "Hey, Brian, like, I might be in punk right now," but no. But that age, just people seem to be more into thinking about doing their own thing versus the old traditional way, going to work for someone else. So what advice would you give to 17, 18-year-old Abby now looking, in the future that we're living in?
I think the most important thing is to not think that anything's going to be given to you on a silver platter ever. You have to work hard, harder than you think you have to work. Whatever skill or trade or form of education that you are choosing to take to build your career and build your brand, work very hard at it. Sharpen the tools. You know, a tradesman never reaches a peak. You know, an artist never reaches a peak. I mean, look at some of the most beautiful painters of all time. They died. And you always imagine what would they have done? Where would their work have gone? Some of the best actors, I mean, they feel like such a loss, right? Because we're living in a state of evolution. We're living in a state of infinity. And I think the more you build content, the more you build your skill set, you're taking yourself to the upper echelon of your category. You're putting yourself in the 1%. And then undeniably, as long as you're a good person and you mean well, you will have success and you will make money. It's a really basic equation.